membership.
Okay. So Rav said we began Perek HaBona, Adaf Kuf Beis Amid Beis, and we're trying to figure out two answers to two questions, which Rabbeinu Chananel explicates, and that is, as far as Binyan Kolshu is concerned, number one, what function does it serve, i.e. what benefit does a person get from a Binyan Kolshu? And secondly, where in the Mishkan was there a Binyan Kol Shehu? The reason why, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, we need two answers to two questions is apparently because first we have to establish that Binyan Kol Shehu is a Malacha and it's included under Malachas Binyan. We would have excluded it completely from Malachas Binyan. We saw, for example, the Tosus Rib says that Chafir's Guva in and of itself is not a Malacha. So you need the Mishkan to establish a Malacha. And number two, there's another element that it has to be a Malachas Tikkun, you know, it has to somehow contribute to the universe. And if it's so small that it has no function and no benefit, then for sure it's not a Malachas Tikkun. So we have three answers to these two questions in the Gemara. Kol Shula Mai Chazya. And Tosus points out again that in Hotzah, the Gemara only asks one question. Meaning, when you carry something that's a Kol Shehu, what function, what purpose, what benefit do you get from it? The Gemara doesn't ask, where do we find the Hotzah of Kol Shehu in the Mishnah? Because the Gemara thinks that once we have the Malachas Hotzah, and that we derive from the Mishkan, it doesn't make any difference what the size, what the volume that you're carrying is and relocating. In any event, you're going to be Chayav. So for that, I don't need Mishkan, but I need to explain and justify the purpose and the benefit that he gets from Meleches Hotzah B'Kol Shehu. Here in the case of Binyan, we're asking my Chazi because we want to know two things. Number one, we want to know if Meleches Binyan B'Kol Shehu is a Meleches Binyan, does it constitute a Melacha? For that we need Mishkan. And number two, what benefit does a person derive from a Binyan Kol Shehu? So the first of the three answers to the Gemara is that of Rabbi Yirmiya, Shekein Ani Chofer Guma Latznia Baprutosov. A poor person who has, he doesn't have enough money to put into a bank account, you know, he doesn't have a safe, a major safe, but he has a couple of prutos, and he saves them for a needy day. So he digs a hole in the ground, and he hides his prutos underground. The kavase gabi mishkan shekein tofre yirios chofrim guma latznia b'machtehem. And if you ask me where in the Mishnah do we find this kind of binyan kol shehu, the answer is that when they built the mishkan, they had to sew, of course, the yirios, and they would take the machat, the needle, and they would hide it inside a small guma. Under in the ground itself. So they'd have to dig this hole in the ground in order to hide their needles. Latznia b'machtehem. So therefore we see that we can extend the malacha of binyan to include a binyan koldu, in this case of guma, from the Mishkan, because indeed in the Mishkan, according to Rabbi Yirmiya's argument, the tofrei yirios were busy finding a possibility of where to hide their machtim, and they did so in a guma. So they dug a guma, which is a binyan koldu. Now Abai seems to object for a very, very simple reason. He says that's not true. This would not be a recommended procedure. Why would they do something which would be detrimental rather than beneficial? Abai Omar Kevan de Meshatchi, which means chaluda, so the putting these needles into the ground is the last thing you want to do. That's highly, not recommended. Ilo Avdi Hachi, then for sure they didn't do this in the Mishkan. So if you're looking for a source in the Mishkan for your kind of guma, you're not going to find one. Ella, but rather we have this Shekeinan Aniose Pitpute Kira Ktana. He attaches the legs, the three legs onto this small stove, right? The Kira Ktana, it's a little stove. Lishpos Olev Kedera Ktana, but he doesn't have really enough food to make for for an entire party. He doesn't have a massive amount of food. He doesn't have money for that. So he only has a limited amount of funds to purchase a small volume. For that, he has this little stove. And now he wants to build legs for the stove, like a tripod. He needs these dry feasts. Dikavase gabi mishkan, and also in the mishkan. Let's say, for example, when they prepared the samamonim, litzvos ayirios is chasra malachton. Let's say they made a certain amount b'tzimtum, and lo and behold, they didn't have enough dye to color the ayirios, so they had to start the process again, but not in a massive amount. They only needed a small amount, so for that day, it was sufficient for them to make what? Pitpute kira ktano, lishpos olea yora ktano, and that's what they did in the Mishkan. It would seem, therefore, that there's no fundamental machlokas here between Rabbi Yirmiah and Abaye. What I mean to say is that they're arguing about whether or not you could justify this binyan koldu of Rabbi Yirmiah in Mishkan. Can you justify the, we're quoting, we need a source, we need a basis. The basis for this extension of Meleches Binyan to include Binyan Koldu is going to be Mishkan. And Abai objects. He says that you're not really coming up with a case in the Mishkan of Binyan Koldu, because that would be highly, shall we say, detrimental to his purpose if he were to put his machat into the ground, Alan.
So why do they have to learn a koldehu from the Mishkan anyways? All they need to learn is binyan from the Mishkan. Koldehu, I mean, whatever the amount is, why don't that should just be halakha l'moshe b'sinai? It doesn't have to be from there.
Well, you're right. Hashiurim halakha l'moshe b'sinai applies once I have a malacha. The Gemara is questioning.
So that's where the malacha. So the malacha is from there. From Binyan.
Right.
Binyan is from there. And then
so what I'm trying to say, I'll see if you can hear what I'm saying. Okay. It's a little bit subtle and not easy, but Shiurim apply once you have a malacha.
Right.
And you want to know what the minimum shear of that malacha is required. However, the Gemara thinks that Binyan Koldu is a concept unto itself. It's not just another form of binyan, and now you're asking, well, what's the shear of binyan? If you were asking what the shear of binyan is, then you would have to know whether binyan koldu fits that shear or not. And for that, I don't need the Mishkan. None of the shearim are derived from the Mishkan. They're derived from halacha l'moshe m'sinai.
Right.
The problem is that we need a concept called binyan koldu. We have to establish, we have to upgrade binyan koldu and incorporate it into the membership club of Meleches Binyan. And that makes Binyan Koldu a separate category unto itself. In the case of Shiurim, where I have the Malacha, I grant you that you're involved, you're engaged in the Malacha, now I want to know how much of a volume. That has nothing to do with the Mishkan. That has to do with the tradition that was passed on, what the minimum shear is. Here the Gemara is embarking on a whole different project. The project is, can we establish that Binyan Koldu is a Binyan? Does it have the status of a malacha? Once it does, then you can talk about shiurim. But before you get to the question, in other words, the question of shiurim is an advanced question. The prerequisite question before you get to the shiurim question is going to be, well, is it a malacha, is it not? If I'm asking a question about shiurim, once I have the malacha, I've postulated the malacha, then I look into the tradition of what the shiurim are. Halacha Moshe Misinai. But if I don't even know if it is a malacha or not, for that I need what? Mishkan.
So from the Mishkan we have another paradigm of binyan, which is maybe the Chofer Guma for the crushing. I mean, there was other binyan in the Mishkan. The binyan is the Mishkan itself. So you're saying we have one category of binyan.
Right. That's the Mishkan itself.
Now we have another category that we have to declare whether it exists, and what, it'll be a tolda of the first binyan?
I don't think it'll be a tolda, because if it's in the Mishkan and it serves a purpose, then it becomes an av.
Then you have two binyan, both the avs?
Right. And that shouldn't surprise us, because, for example, Bishul and Ofel, both avos, Notea and Zoreah, both avos. We have many cases where you have two things that accomplish the same goal.
They won't be 39.
No, so that's a question that we'll have to address when we get to the whole concept of the Ein Ha'af. Like, why is Bishul counted together with Ofen, the 39? Why is Noteah counted together with Zoreah? I mean, that's a sugya. That's a real Klal Gadol sugya. If we're learning Klal Gadol, then we're not doing Klal Gadol on Thursdays, but in Klal Gadol, that's a major, major issue. Namely, why is it that Mevashel and Ofa counted in the Cheshvan as one Av? You know, this is sort of like Moni HaMitzvahs. You know, if you've ever studied, you know, Tayag Mitzvahs and Shrashim and so forth, try to figure out. So what are the Shrashim that would determine whether you count something as a separate Av or not? But I think conceptually, Yechiel, you're absolutely right. The Gemara is now in its underlying premise in the Kasha is assuming that if you'll find Binyan in the Mishkan, which is a Kaldahu, then that binyan is going to be an av unto itself. It's not included in binyan. There are qualitatively two different categories of binyan. There's a binyan gomor, and then there's a binyan koldahu. The binyan gomor is the Mishkan itself, but where in the Mishkan did they create a binyan koldahu? That's what the Gemara is trying to look at. Michael, would you mind if we close the door? Again, if it gets very hot, we'll, you know, be cool. We'll have to open the door. But
aren't there other shiurim?
Just one second. I just wanted to answer Michael's question.
What is koldahu? Koldahu is what a tiny, minute amount. Is that what koldahu is?
I don't know, Michael. That's what I think we're going to try to clarify in the next few minutes. Meaning, I think that each one of these three shitas, we start with the sheet of Yirmiyah, then we jump to the sheet of Abaye, and finally we get to the sheet of Avraham bar Yaakov. Each one, I think, is operating with a different definition of what a binyan koldahu is. And the fascinating question I want to ask you is there a machlokas here? Right now, I've stacked the cards, but it's not fair what I'm doing. You know, I'm saying to you that there is no machlokas. Abaye is only saying the following. I object to your claim, Rabbi Yirmiyah, that you found a source for binyan koldahu in the Mishkan in the case of Chofer Guma. That's not true. There wasn't a Chafiras Guma in the Mishkan. Why? Because it would be a crazy idea. You know, again, if you're an Ani, maybe it would make sense and you could be justified. If you have no other alternative, you know, bless Brera, you would hide your prutos in the ground and dig a, again, I don't know how healthy that is for your prutos either. You know, Kappa prutos, for example, get ruined with time and they get rusty as well. But if that's what you have to do, you know, the Ani would go to the store to buy his markets, and he would go, you know, he'd go to the marketplace every day, every other day, so it wasn't, but the machtim, they were used from time to time, and in the Mishkan, says Abaye, they would not have done, it would not be a very recommended idea to take your needles and submerge them in the ground. And therefore, that didn't take place in the Mishkan. So far, I'm presenting the sugya as if the machlokas here between Abaye and Rabbi Yirmiyah, the first two of the three, is only a technical machlokas. Did this actually, have you succeeded in finding this in the Mishkan? The second stage is going to address Michael's question, but I'm not up to that yet. I'll be up to it in just a few minutes. And that is it possible that Abaye disagrees with Rabbi Yirmiyah because Rabbi Yirmiyah postulates a certain kind of binyan koldahu? Abaye rejects that binyan koldahu. That binyan koldahu is not a malacha. And therefore Abaye would say, if you dug a hole in the ground to place your prutos or to hide your machten, you would not be chayav on Shabbos, but you would be chayav for attaching legs to a small stove, and that's binyan koldahu. In that sense, you know, Michael, we get much closer to the question: is what is binyan koldahu? But be that as it may, at this particular point, what I'm suggesting is that binyan koldahu, as Michael said before, is a very small kind of binyan. It's not a structure. What is a structure? A structure is something that I could live in. I could bring my animals in to live in. You know, Yaakov Asa Sukkos, you know, the first zone. You know, that's called a structure. But here, you're not really creating a full structure. Who can walk into the guma? You know, maybe you could put a machad into the guma, a couple of prutos into the guma. What are you going to do with this little kira Okay, you can use it functionally for cooking your potato. You know, you have only one potato nemach here in Ani, and for that a small stove will do. But it's a very small, small structure. And we don't know exactly what defines a small structure. Therefore, what Abaye and Rabbi Yirmi seem to be addressing at this point is just simply what I call a quantitative question. In quantity, this is not a major, magnificent structure. It's not multifunctional. For example, if you're ever in, and I'm not telling you to go, but if you're ever in Barcelona, right? So you want to study Gaudi. You heard of Gaudi? He was one of the greatest architects that ever lived. And he lived not long ago, the last century. So you could go see Gaudi's house. And that's a magnificent structure with innovations, and I don't remember what street it's on. It's near the Rambla, you know, and so on. You'll go see it. That's already a binyan gadol. The Mishkan was, Lahavdil was a binyan gadol. I build a house, that's a binyan gadol. Now we have something that's quantitatively, again, just in quantity, is a binyan gadol. So what kind of binyan katan is functional? What kind of binyan katan can not only benefit me, but could benefit the Osei HaMishkan? And that's going to be a secondary issue between Rabbi Yirmiya and Abaye. Rabbi Yirmiya is going to say, well, there's a functional, small, quantitatively small, minuscule binyan, which they did in the Mishkan, and that's a guma. And it's a guma lehachbi bo es amachat. Abai says I can't base your conclusion or my conclusion of a binyan katan, quantitatively small, on what you say happened in the Mishkan. You want to convince me that in the Mishkan the Osei HaYirios had occasion to create these small legs for a tripod of a small stone. That I'm willing to say. Just one second. Then we get to Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Rav Acha bar Yaakov is already, I think, on a different wavelength. This concept of a binyan katan, because quantitatively it's a smaller structure, that doesn't sit well with Rav Acha bar Yaakov. All these small structures could be functional, but they're so insignificant that the Osei HaMishkan would have done everything to avoid this kind of pishivk, as I call it, these kind of small involvements in malacha. Why? Because ein anias b'makom ashirus. Certainly, the Osei HaMishkan was smart enough and clever enough to work it out in such a way that they wouldn't need these pitpute kira. Hello, but I want to find something much more fundamental. A major breakthrough. Not a question of what I call a binyan katan, you know, something quantitatively small. But she came bala bayashi yeshlo nekev bibiraso. The man has a hole in his roof and the rains are coming in. Is what does he do? So small. He does an act of stima. Stima means he plugs up the hole. The kavase gabi Mishkan, where would you find such a thing in Mishkan? Now you might say, well, in Mishkan, wouldn't they take all the precautions possible to guarantee that they wouldn't find a hole in the Mishkan? But there are certain elements in nature that you can't fight against. You know, man, for example, in agriculture, is still trying to get rid of all the various Eser Makas, you know, that come down from Shemayim, and we haven't solved all those problems yet. Shekein keresh and nafla bo darga. There's certain termites that love to attack wood, and we sprayed, but they still got in there. Is matif lesocha ever visosma. Again, a kind of a stima. Now, Rabosai, we're going to have to spend a lot of time figuring out this stima, because keep in mind that the Kroshim have a din of what? Of Hedesh. And Hedesh doesn't tolerate stimos, you know, and pegimos, and hegdesh and nifgam is possible. So for that, you'll take a look. There's a page that I think you should have received, which quotes the Sfas Emes. Can you tell me where it is? Just because I don't want to spend my time looking for it. Do you have such a thing? It's no. It should be on page. It's on top.
Ayin Tes.
Yeah, the top left should say Ayin Tes. On the bottom it says Ha'im Mum Posel VeKrushei Mishkan. Okay then. So that's going to be. You have that?
Yeah.
No. Maybe it's still in the. It's still in the machine then.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. You take a look, Michael. The bottom of the machine. It should be there. Okay.
Incidentally, with the Gemara later on, since I haven't learned forward, since Rashi makes it clear that the Kol Shu applies to all four or five different mentions in the Mishnah of different Lachos and Sates and Kodeyat and all those, will the Gemara also struggle to find where that existed in the Mishnah?
I don't think so. The question is why not, but... Okay then, so I have a copy myself. I have the original. If anybody wants a copy here, please take it. And again, the bottom left of page Ayin Tes, you'll see that. So make an underline over there, and we'll get back to it later. Okay. Rabosai, I think that Rav Acha bar Yaakov is coming up with a major breakthrough here in terms of what Binyan Koldu is all about. Again, we're not talking about size. After all, what he's doing is he's improving the krushim, correct? He's improving the krushim in a very substantial way. The krushim now are non-functional, and they're about to collapse, just like this guy who's got a hole in his roof. And Visosmo, now we're not talking about size anymore. Because again, the binyan here is not this... Is not the, you know, like a dentist will fill in a hole with what does he put inside there?
Putty.
What's it called?
Putty.
What's it called in, you know, the silver that he puts into your, you know, for a filling? All right, we'll call it a silver filling, you know, because Harvey's not here today. He would help us. Okay. So what do we have? We're not doing a malacha in the silver. We're doing malacha in the krushim. Or in the case of bias, right? What's the language here of Baal Bayis Yeshlo Nekev Bibiraso? So now his binyan is on the bira. That's not a binyan kolduhu. That's not a small binyan. We're not talking about quantity. But what's the flip side of quantity? Of what we call kamus? What's the flip side?
Echus.
Quality, echus. So we're talking about something echus now. Right? What quality are we talking about? What's the major breakthrough here of Rav Acha bar Yaakov? Anyone? You don't see what I'm driving at?
It's a tikkun in the police. I know that's what he's talking about.
He moves away from size. But how can Mashu not be size? It must be related to size, surely.
That's a significance.
Well, it does he use the word mashu? Maybe I missed that word mashu here.
No, that's what
just one second. No,
yeah, no, but he doesn't spell out mashu. In other words, his mashu is radically different than the mashu that's being addressed in the first two cases by Rabbi Yirmiyahu and Abaye. His mashu is a qualitative mashu. But what is so unique about this mashu?
It's got nearly no dimension.
What do you say?
He's got nearly no dimension because it's so small. It's talking about.
No, but again, if he's improving the keresh, then the keresh is massive, right? He's got a bira. A bira is a mansion, right? It's a binyan gadol mod. And right now, the binyan gadol has a hole in it, and the rains are coming in. I wouldn't say that that's a small, you know, in size, you know, in volume. I wouldn't say that's a small binyan. So what makes this into a binyan kolduhu, Rabosai? Where is Rav Acha bar Yaakov's major breakthrough here? He's telling you something that you never would have entertained, and he's going to prove it from the Mishkan.
I was going to say it's bona, it's not makabim patish.
No. We, again, I'm not entering into bona and makabim patish. That's a headache that I'm trying to avoid. You know, I have to take special sleeping pills in order to know the difference between bona and makabim patish. But we're not ready for that. You're just functioning in terms of binyan. How is Rav Acha bar Yaakov's binyan radically different than the binyan that we've had until now?
Small contribution.
What do you say?
Trying to give
his
size.
No, it's a size. It's a massive binyan.
You know. He's not going in the direction of aniyut. He's going.
No. Leave out aniyut. I'm just. You're getting caught up, I think, in the details. You know, how is it different than everything else?
He makes it functional. Right? about doing that.
Oh, well, yeah, that sounds like less of a chiddush, but you're right, Alan. How is it different in the first two cases?
Different than the first two cases?
I'm looking for a word here. Okay, let me stop playing games with you because I see we're not getting too far. In my mind, the word binyan should be conceptually connected, associated with another word which I call structure. Meaning, either binyan means a building a structure, or building means creating. If it doesn't mean creating a structure, then it means adding something to the structure. What we call structural changes. Have you know, in engineering, I think that at least my wife uses this term all the time in design. You need a structural change. You know, it's not a matter of moving the furniture around, but you have to change something. What would be an example of a structural change in this room if, let's say, for example, I wanted to get direct access to John? Right behind you is the... what is right behind you? I don't know. What?
The Sifriya.
Okay, I want to get direct access to the Sifriya. What structural change would I make? Well, let's say, for example, this was closed over here, and I need air, I need light. So what would that be?
Make a window.
Make a window. A window would be a structural change. I'm not sure if Abaye and Rabbi Yirmiya are impressed by Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's chiddush. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is going too far. You want to talk about a structural change that's small. You know, I changed the structure of my ground, or for that matter, according to Rav Yirmiya, I may have even created a new structure in my ground. Right? It's like a safe. Or according to Abaye, at least I took a stove and I made it into something that's movable. You know, I made a structural change. I added legs to a stove. Okay, it's a binyan katan, but that's only quantitatively. In quantity, it's very small. That's as far as Rabbi Yirmiya and Abaye are willing to go. They're willing to say, I'm going to try to prove to you, A, that it's functional to have a small structure, and B, that it is done in Mishkan for a small structure. But at least a structure. You have a hole. Is that a structural change? That's where I think Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is coming up with a radical chiddush. Okay, everyone with me so far? Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is postulating that there's a new concept of Meleches Boneh. Maybe it should be an Av unto itself. I don't want to call it a Toldah, but an Av, because it's in the Mishkan. And that is that even if I don't structurally change something in a significant way, but I add to, as Alan said before, what? I improve the
function
of a structure. So you hear, I'm differentiating between change and function. Up until, but not including, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, we were talking about structure. Rav Acha Bar Yaakov's radical chiddush is, no, what's a binyan katan? It has nothing to do with the size and all. The binyan katan is function. If I can make a significant functional impact on a binyan, that itself is Meleches Boneh.
But this seems to me logical, because like if you're building a house, finished building it, you've got cracks. Now you're sealing the cracks.
Right.
That's part of the bonnet. He's in a way.
So you're on the same page with Rav Acha Bar Yaakov. Maybe you're a Gilgul Neshama of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov.
No.
So next time there's a monster in the Beis Medrash with seven heads, if you remember the sugi in the second parak of Kedushin, we'll call you in. Well, was it Rav Acha or his son Yaakov? I forget which one of them killed the dragon with the seven heads. So again, now there are two definitions of binyan. One definition of binyan, says Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, is to create a structure, or make at least a radical structural change. The other is to fix up something. Something went, the cracks in the ground, in the walls. If there are cracks in the walls, I can't tolerate this. So I have to fix it up. And fixing up a binyan is also considered Meleches Binyan. That's called a binyan kaldah. So then, you know, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is on a whole different page over here. He's not talking about size. He's talking about conceptually, or what I call qualitatively, presenting a breakthrough definition, a new category of Meleches Binyan that's fundamentally different from that which Abaye and Rava were operating with. Now I want to turn back the clock to Abaye and Rav Yirmiyah. Is there a machlokus between Abaye and Rav Yirmiyah? So far, I stacked the cards a little bit and I said, you know what? Abaye's only interested in arguing. He has he picks a fight with Rav Yirmiyah on a secondary issue. You know, come on, says Abaye. Did they really in Mishkan put their needles into the ground? The very stupid thing to do. You know, it's not, you know, your needles are not going to last very long if you insert them into the ground. But maybe no. Maybe we could say that Abaye is only using that logic in order to free himself from Rav Yirmiyah's definition of Binyan Koldim. And in fact, Abaye argues against Rav Yirmiyah, Al Pi Din, and he rejects that kind of Binyan Koldim. That Binyan Koldim, says Rav Abaye, is not acceptable. That is not to be granted membership in the Meleches Binyan Club. It's not a Meleches Binyan. It doesn't have a Shem Binyan. I'll prove it to you because in the Mishkan they didn't do it. But that's just the technicality. He's just showing you and demonstrating to you that you cannot postulate such a radical chiddush in Meleches Binyan based on Mishkan. No, there was no such thing in the Mishkan. So what is the machlokas now between Rav Yirmiyah and Abaye? And I want to suggest the following. That Rav Yirmiyah holds that a hole in the ground is considered binyan.
Because maybe it's orea.
Maybe it's orea. Okay, I don't know. You may be 100% correct, Seb, but you're a step ahead of me. What I wanted to say something different. In order to... According to Abaye, and this is where Abaye can't tolerate Rav Yirmiyah, according to Abaye, in order to postulate Meleches Binyan, you must have what? You must create a structure. Or fix up a structure.
But Abaye is talking about a kli. So how is it?
Good. A kli is also a structure.
And Binyan became...
Okay, I don't know. So that's a sugya. Again, as I told you, you know, you got to get me. You got to get me some. What was that thing that helps you sleep at night? What is it called?
I don't know.
Value. Or, you know, get me some value to talk about Binyan Mikalim. So let's assume Yesh Binyan Mikalim. Okay, there is such a man. Even if I hold Ain Binyan Mikalim, but Ain Binyan Mikalim means if I don't make a radical change in the kli, if I make a radical change in the kli. Then everybody agrees that Yesh Binyan Mikalim, right? The Gemara Daf Mem Zion, you know. So this is Abaye saying this is a radical change in the kli. There's one kli called Akira, and there's another kli called Akira Sheyeshbo Pitpute Raglayim of Akira. It's a totally different Kira. It's your portable Kira, right?
Hasn't the Gemara already established that digging the hole is Binyan, full stop?
I don't know. Maybe I missed it, Michael. Did I miss the boat? It's possible. Again, I'm learning this with you together. But I honestly didn't know that digging a hole is called binyan. I thought that was Rav Yirmiyah's chiddush over here. Because again, what have you done over here? Karka is karka is karka. So you made a hole in the karka. Is that called a binyan? Where's the binyan? I don't see a binyan. Ani chotzel about binyan. Binyan. If a binyan, I don't see a binyan. I see karka with a hole in it. Karka with a hole in it is not binyan, and therefore it's not Meleches Binyan. Ah, you'll prove to me that they did it in the Mishkan. They didn't do it in the Mishkan. But again, Abaye's objection to Rav Yirmiyah is only a hechetimsa to tell Rav Yirmiyah, bug off. You know, get off my case. There is no such Mishkan. You want to use Mishkan as a source for your radical conclusion that there was Chafiras Guma as Meleches Binyan. I disagree. Now again, I'm wondering if Abaye would go as far as to disagree with a person who wants to make a hole in his ground for a structural purpose, meaning he wants to put an amud in his house. What's it called in engineering? Those, you know, there's certain amudim that you can't move. What are they called? What?
RSJ.
RSJ. But what are they called in Hebrew?
Footers.
I remember we have when you walk into our place here, 6 minutes up the road here on Rabbi Meir, the first thing you see when you open the door is this big amud, and my wife is dying to get rid of it, so she had to bring an engineer, because the question is whether it's
what's standing on the amud.
No, yeah.
Right, but what's that called? There's a word for it in Hebrew.
A bearing.
No, but there are two types of amudim.
There's
a structural amud that keeps the roof up on top. You know?
It's called a bearing wall.
A bearing wall. Okay. In Hebrew, I'm just curious. I have to ask my wife. Okay, fine.
So that's not about Korah.
What?
We're not talking about Korah, because Korah is something.
No, the Amud that holds up the Korah. Basically, the engineer will tell you that if you move that Amud, your whole building will collapse.
Or less, you know. The end, you know.
Correct. And then there's something else which has the
support beam. Support beam.
So that's what that was the psak that my wife got from the engineer, that we need to put, if we take out this Amud, we need support beams. A child is already, by the way, smashed into the Amud. We got to get rid of that Amud. Okay, fine. Anyway, so what do I want to say? The following: if you dig a hole in order to put an Amud, let's say a supporting pillar, that would be a structural change in Melech. You know, that would be Melech's Binyan. But to dig a hole and you're not building anything on top of that hole, so what have you done? Nothing.
What about if you would...
The carcass is the same carcass.
This was just in the news the other day, so I cleared about it. We were talking about it in Har Chavrusa. What if you're digging to be Megala on the wall? There's a wall there, like the wall of the hotel.
So I don't think you'd be chayav for binyan. I think that would be siluk monea, meaning that you would be removing something.
Yeah, but you're removing nothing. You're removing dirt. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. You can't say that you did a melacha on that structure that's submerged on the ground by exposing it. You know, that's not creating a binyan. The binyan was already created. It's non-functional. It's not accessible. You're making it accessible. I don't think giving access to a binyan would be melech's binyan. It may come under some other melech that we have to see. Maybe it's makam and patish. I don't know. Yeah, but don't talk to me about makam and patish.
But it's not. You're making it functional. That's not the same thing that you just.
But you're indirectly making it functional. You're only being masalik something that prevents you. It's a barrier that you know that it's a dam that doesn't give you access to the structure. Okay. So just being masalic something that's a barrier for a structure, I don't think that would be Melech's bone. But anyway, so comes along Abaye, and Abaye's chiddush is pitpute kira. So what's the chiddush of pitpute kira? So as Zev said before, maybe the kira is a keli, and the question is, does this come under ein binyan b'kelim? So the answer is the following: if I fix up a kli, then el chinami, that's not considered binyan. Because Kalim are Mufka from Binyan, according to that Mandiyom. But if I create a structural change in the Kli, in such a way that now the Kli functions in a totally different way, then I've virtually created a brand new Kli. And if I create a brand new Kli, everybody agrees that I'm Chayev from Melech's Bona. But that's the radical Chiddush of Abaye. So again, the radical chiddush of Rabbi Yirmiyah is that even though I didn't create any sort of a kli or any sort of a binyan, nevertheless, this is considered melech's bona. I've structured the karka in such a way that now I get a benefit from the karka. You know, open says me, I've created an opening in the karka. Sort of like in Korach Ados, you know, or it's Paschas Pip. You know, so I opened up the path of the karka, and that's itself called Melech's binyan. Abaye is not willing to go that far. Abaye requires some sort of structural creation, but Abaye wants to say, I have a radical chiddush. What makes a binyan called a who? It's a binyan called a who because it's only in a kli. It's not a structure. But if I create the kli, or alternatively, I made such a profound, fundamental change in the function of the kli. I added pitputim to the kira. That's itself equivalent to creating a kli, and that's called meleches binyan. Comes along Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, and he says, "Ein anius b'mokom ashius." No, instead he's got this tolas, you know, and he's got to fill it up with aver because there's a hole in the carriage. So filling up a hole is not called ein anius b'mokom ashius. So what bothers Rav Acha bar Yaakov with this with Abaye. Why does he object to Abaye with the principle of Ein Anis B'Mokom Ashiras? Is that just again a technicality to say that, that when the, you know, they prepared the Samamonim, they did it with great volume, and then, or is it more than just a technicality that he's cholek on Abaye al pi din? Possibly because it's a kli, I don't know. But Ein Anis B'Mokom Ashiras. So for that, I wanted to see this piece over here. I think it's in the name of the Sfas Emes on page Ayin Tes. Now, just one second. I just forgot to mention one thing. On page Ayin Hay, on the very, very bottom, you'll see it says Kehilos Yaakov. So Yechiel was very kind enough to print out the Kehilos Yaakov for me in its original form. I did not get a chance to go through it. I tried to get this in my limited resources from Bar Ilan and from Hebrewbooks.org. I was not able to get a hold of it. He's got six volumes on Hebrewbooks.org of the Kehilos Yaakov, but none of them. What is this volume called? Just says Shabbos on the outside?
It was...
probably says Masechta Shabbos on the outside or something like that.
I don't know. I never saw six volumes. I don't know what I have. Was Yaakov, it's like,
so he has six volumes and none of them say Shabbos on it.
This one is Shabbos and Erev.
Oh, so none of them say Shabbos on it. So I don't know. I wasn't able to. So thank you, Yechiel, but believe that you know, after I take my volume, I'll be real, and I see a little bit about the Sugya of Binyamin Kalim, I'll be willing to take a look at this Kehilos Yaakov. But one thing I noticed in the Kehilos Yaakov that can be very relevant to our Sugya, and he says that, and this I think you'll see on the top of Ayin Vav, I'm looking for the word Ma'ara here. Yeah, there it is on the second line. So imagine the following case. Have you ever been to, let's say, the old cemetery in Tzfat, where you'll see, you know, they have Chana v'Shiva Baneha and this. Well, who else they have there? I forget. They have one of the Tanoim, they have one of the Asohurim Kebachus, and then they have the Al. A lot of it is called a Ma'ara, Mem Ayin Reish Hei. Now, a Ma'ara, yeah. Me'ara, right, in fancy Hebrew, is something interesting, because I was thinking that. And he assumes the Kehilos Yaakov, I don't know where he proves it from, again, for that I have to go through this, but he assumes that a Ma'ara is an Av Malacha of Meleches Bone. And based on that, he has a plukto with the Evan Ozel, which we didn't get to. The Evan Ozel assumes that Meleches Bone requires lechaber chelik al chelik, that you join different pieces. And here he says in the Ma'ara, you're not joining two pieces. How would the Evan Ozel justify that Ma'ara is an Av Meleches Bone? But obviously, if this Ma'ara is gigantic, right, you can bury, I don't know, tons of people down in this Ma'ara, which apparently they did back in the day. That's that on a quantitative level, the Echus, that's already a binyan gadol. You know, that's a binyan gadol. But let's look at it from a qualitative perspective, from the kamus that I said. So we said the following, that Abaye found Rabbi Yirmiya had crossed all the red lines. You know, it was too radical for him. He found Rabbi Yirmiya very revolutionary. Why? Because karka is karka is karka. So where you made a gula in the karka. So what? Is that a structure? Is that a binyan? And therefore, in fundamental principle, Abaye objected to Rabbi Yirmiya. If that be the case, then I would suggest, thinking out loud with you, that the Kehilos Yaakov and his Ma'ara would support the position of Rabbi Yirmiya. Because I don't think Ma'ara is a structure. Ma'ara is a hole in the ground. Albeit it's a gigantic hole in the ground. But if we're assuming that Abaye was objecting to Rabbi Yirmiya not on quantitative terms, but on qualitative terms, meaning Abaye's objection to Rabbi Yirmiya was not because the guma in the ground to hide your, you know, to hide your prutos is small, but rather because a guma in the ground is not a structure, whereas adding pitputim to a kira is creating a new kira. A new heft of kira. If that be the case, then Ma'ara might possibly support the position of Rav Yiriya against Abaye. That's what I wanted to point out. So that's something to think about. Do we view subterranean ditches and so forth as structures? Or do we say, no, that's just another hole in the karka. It just happens to be larger than a regular hole in the karka. But at the end of the day, you haven't created a new structure. You've just removed, you've opened up space in the karka. Like, for example, in many cities in the West, you know, there are, you know, to create trains above ground is very complicated. Here in Yerushalayim, they were able to pull it off. It took years and years. But in cities like, for example, London, you have the, what do they call it, the underground or the tube, whatever they call it. And in America, in New York, they call it the subway, right? So all those can be viewed in two ways. Either they're structures, they happen to be under the ground. Right, so you just put on your air mask and you go down there, you know what I'm saying? You put on your oxygen. Or no, it's a larger hole, it's another guma in the karak.
I can assure you, you don't need oxygen to go down there. You don't need a mask.
When was the last time were you in New York?
Oh, New York.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't say that.
You have to breathe. Listen, Michael, when you breathe the underground in New York and you come above ground, you bench Goma, you know.
Okay,
you may be benching Goma for a variety of reasons, although lately I heard it's much safer. But in my day, I mean, my parents would stay up all night until I came home if they knew I had to use the subway. Nowadays, the underground is dangerous for other reasons, not because of the thugs, but because of the terrorists, Rahman al-Islam. Anyway, now we're on the bottom of Ayin Tes, and this might give us a little bit of an insight into this whole idea of plugging up a hole in the Keresh. He says, Madua Keresh Nuflabel Tolas Kosher Libnias HaMishkan. At the end of the day, what Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is claiming is that where was Binyan Katan in the Mishkan, it was to pour this lead into the hole of the Keresh. He says that wouldn't be kosher, because of a Mishnah in Masechta Midos that establishes that Eitz Shenimsa Bo Tolas Pasul
LeMizbeach.
LeMizbeach, I meant to say. Did I say Mizbeach? I meant to say Mizbeach. Yeah. Oh, it doesn't say Mizbeach here, but you have to add Mizbeach, right? Is Pasul Alosal Gabi? Oh, it does say Mizbeach. LeGabi Eitz Marov. Okay. So the Sfasemis makes the following analogy. There's something called Atzei Marocha, which have a din of Hegdesh, and there's something called the Krushim. In the Mishkan, they also have a din of Hegdesh. And therefore, he's making the following analogy. The halacha is that if you have Atzei Marocha, that Naflaba Tolas, and the Tolas eats a piece, you know, takes out a bite of the chunk of the Eitz, you can no longer use it as Eitzim to feed the Mizbeach, the Marocha, the Mizbeach. So too, there should be a psul in the Krushim in terms of the binyan of the Mishkan, if there's a tolas that created a hole in the Keresh. Now, of course, you have to ask, what size is the hole? But apparently it was a significant size, because otherwise they wouldn't bother with this whole effort of pouring lead into it, right? It must have been significant enough, and therefore it should be called what's called a pagima, or a mum, and it should undermine the status of Hegdesh vis-a-vis the Krushim. We'd have to find a replacement Keresh. Why is it that in the context of Bnei Mishkan, you qualify, you can validate pouring the lead into the hole? L'chora, it's already possible. Oh. Now, it could be that the answer to the question of the Sfasemis is more technical than fundamental. It might be that in the case of Atzei Marocha, nobody would think of pouring lead into the Atzei Marocha. If you had a real significant hole, you're not going to fill it up with lead. Just simply replace those Eitzim with other Eitzim. But if you talk about Krushim, and these were Atzei Shittim that were brought down from Mitzrayim, you know, and so forth and so on, then it's a significant kind of problem, and we have to solve that problem. Ein Hachinami. Right now, the status of the Keresh, as long as Naflaba Talas, is possible. It's got a Pegima. It's got a Psul Mum. But I can fix up that Psul Mum by adding lead and filling in the Keresh, the hole in the Keresh. Oh. So, Rabosa, I was thinking, and you can turn now to the next side if you like, but I was thinking the following. There's a Sugya in Masechta Rosh Hashanah about a crack in the shofar. And if the shofar is cracked, the Gemara vacillates back and forth whether or not you could fill in the crack and be machshir the shofar. And the Gemara basically comes up with a thesis that it depends whether you use min b'mino or min b'she'eno mino. Meaning, if you could fill in the crack with shivrei shofar, with little pieces of shatters or shards of shofar, then enu chinami, you might be able to be machshir the shofar. If, on the other hand, you put in putty or lead or something else, that would be a problem min b'sheino mino chotzitz. So, first question I wanted to ask myself was: is it possible that the answer to the Sfasemis' question is that pouring lead onto the keresh and filling in the hole, that itself, like the case of shofar, could be machshir the keresh? Enochinami. The premise of the Sfasemis is absolutely correct. There is a problem of a pagam and a mum in keresh, insofar as krashi and mishkan have the status of hegdesh, and a mum is possible in hegdesh. Not just in animals, but also in objects, as we saw in the Atzei Maror. But nevertheless, I disagree with the Sfasemis as to whether or not this psul is irreversible. There is a solution to the problem, and that is by filling up the hole. But then I ask myself the question, wait a minute, what are you using to fill up the hole? If you're using Eitzim, that's min b'mino. But if you're using lead, that's min b'sheino mino. And maybe that should be a chatzitza. And the Gemara says explicitly here on Daf Kuf Beis Amid Beis that they used Eiver. Then the thought occurred to me that Tosis has two opinions as to why you can't use anything to fill in the shofar.
This is called shofar.
So Tosis says in one opinion that if you use something else, then you don't hear the kol shofar. In other words, it's Mishana the kol, that the wind that you blow in bounces off this piece. And you're hearing not one shofar, but two shofars. Or not one shofar, but something that's not even a shofar. And maybe in that sense, here we can integrate the lead. If lead is the best way of filling in not just the holes in your teeth, but also the holes in your krushim, then that's not called a chatzitza. But here he quotes two different sources in two different paragraphs. And he says the following. He says that there's something called a shinui she'eno nikar. Now, a shinui she'eno nikar in Shas works in one of two opposite directions. It works lifsol and it works lahakshir. In other words, sometimes if you make a shinui and it's not nikar, that's a positive. Sometimes it's a negative. Here, he says it's a positive. Why? What makes it eno nikar? So the answer is that the keresh is made up of two parts. There's the wood part, and then there's the outer lining of the keresh. The outer lining of the keresh is zahav. And he says that once you fill up the hole in the keresh with lead, and then you pour the zav on top of it, that becomes a shinui she'eno nikar. So again, it turns out like this. Wait, just one second, Zev. I just want to just formulate it for my own sake. Okay, just want to make sure if I understand it correctly. Say it like this. Eino chinami. The premise of the Sfasemis is correct. And if you have a hole in the keresh, that's called a pagam, and that's a mum, and it's posel and hegdesh. Enochinam. However, he says the following: kolzman, as long as that hole in the keresh is nikar, then it's a psul. But if that hole is covered up in such a way that it's eno nikar, then it's not a psul.
But it's already covered up by the zohar without putting anything in
there. Right, but apparently, I guess it got exposed, right? And at that point, it became posel, and now he covers it over with zohar.
Maybe before they.
Let me read it inside and see. I hope I'm not misleading you, but that's what he says in the name of the migdal. Midganos hamerchakim. Okay, this sounds very cosmetic here. He says the following: Shashinui lohoyo nikar li achar tofas ha'ever. After he put the aver into the what?
Hole.
The hole, right? The Nofla Darna. What was called Darna? Is it the Lashon Gemara? Right? Is that what is in Aramaic? Darna?
Yeah.
Darna is the tolas, I think.
Darna is the restaurant. It's
down there. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, what's the language of the Shas again? Shenofla bo Darna.
Right.
Darna, I think, is the name of the tolas in Aramaic. Let me just see if I'm right here. Yeah. He says that Darna is a tolas. So there's a hole in the Keresh, and he says that after he puts the Aver and fills in this hole, it's not Nikar. Why is it not Nikar? Mipnei shakroshim hoyu mitzupim zov. Ubekach bir mashahoye nita lachshim inayin legemar shekeresh enofa vadarne itifu utocho Aver ishtamshu bo hari misvara hoyu lonu lomar shalo ishtamshu bekeresh kazek klau mishum she'ein anius el b'mokom ein anius b'mokom. She was right. So l'chora, they should have thrown out this keresh and replaced it with a more healthy and perfect keresh. It's miyusha. Keresh hakrosh mayim mitzupim zav lo yanika. So when do we say it's anius? That's only if the anius is anius hanikeres. But if it's not an anius hanikeres, the lo yanika b'mshina klal is therefore they wouldn't have to replace this keresh.
But why did they have to fix it at all?
I don't know. Why couldn't they replace it? That I don't know.
No, I mean, not even replace it. If you say it's in a nicker because you have a zav over it, so let there be a hole under it. What's the difference? You don't see it.
Well, again, it's only after you did the tzipui. There were two stages here. He says, li achar atofas ha'ever ha'krosh, I don't know.
No,
I don't know. How did he know about the... How did he know about this hole? If
before they in the process of making the crushing.
So it was before they put the zav on.
Yeah, they've had the wood.
So what's your question again?
So why bother filling it if you're going to then be mitzapid with zav afterwards?
Oh,
Vayner
Nicker. Well, Chasra Achmona Yisrael. I guess zav wasn't so cheap. You know, they'd rather fill it up with aver. Aver was
no,
cheap.
No, I mean, don't fill it up at all. Just cover it like you would anyway.
But in order to cover it and make it any Nicker, you're going to have to cover up the. You have to fill it the hole.
The aver
you need a lot of zav for that.
The aver was killed the tolat.
Oh, the aver had a power to kill the tolat.
It's very hot. You just pours it into it. Because otherwise...
Uh-huh. Yes, he's not just filling the hole, he's also killing the tolat. That's interesting. I never thought of that.
If you leave the tolat in there, or yeah. Maybe after they actually took it out, and now they need to just smooth it down with Avril.
So if there was no...
You can't just suffocate the tolat, start putting gold on it.
And not in the wood fell out, there would be no tolat.
So this is interesting, that the soul of Nikar. Because I was wondering, you remember the story about Kamsa Bar Kamsa, you know, a mum could be very subtle, and yeah. It's almost not noticeable. But I guess if you look at it, you could see it. You understand what I mean? That's called nikar. Nikar doesn't mean that it's apparent to me.
Yeah.
Like for example, in the case of a sukkah, you know, schach l'mal michav, there it's possible because it's not nikar to me. You know, it's as I walk down the street and I see the sukkah, I don't see the schach. I have to stretch my arm, you know, my neck in order to see it above 20 am. But here, that's not the halacha. The halacha is that such schach would be possible even if I have to make an effort in order to see it. But eino nikar means that even if I'm looking directly at it, I don't see it. It's completely hidden from view. That's the only way of being machshir.
Because of the tzipui and zah. And zah went over the whole board.
So I was wondering if, you see, for this you have to really know Kodshim well, if something becomes possible, but there's a way of being machshir, it is a separate halacha, that since it had the status of Hegdesh, and I could reinstate the status of Hegdesh by removing the psul, I'm obligated to do so because of the Kedushas Hegdesh. I don't know. For that you have to really ask the Bekiyim in Kodshim. Then he quotes another approach in the name of the Yesh Mefarshim. He says that the Gemara in Chulin, quoted by Rabbeinu Gershom, that pegimas mum bekodshin poseles in a very small amount, right? Chagiras tziporim, which is probably that sugi over there, given is hainu pegima bekroshe hamishkan shenemar bahem v'yachdov yu tamim al rosho. It's not a new din in psul, but is a positive requirement of tamim. And the krushim is this bzudra, a separate halacha in krushim that we require tamim. Tamim being below shum pegimos. No, if that be the case, then we have to reject the previous approach. Because what are we saying over here? We're saying over here to answer this Fasevis' question, Enochinami, there's a pegam in the kodshim because of the hole in the, created by the tolas, that pegima. But the answer is, I'm going to fill it in and then I'm going to cover it over. It's still not shleimim. You know, it's the krushim in and of themselves are not shleimim. So if you're talking about a new din of a psul of a mum that comes externally, then Enochinami, you've solved that problem. But there's a positive requirement of a kiyum shleimus of tamim. Is that the kasha? If that be the case, why is this keresh? It's not a keresh that's tamim. So it's a din in the heft of the keresh. The heft itself is not tamim. So he wants to say that this is not like my case in shofar, where you can fill in the shofar and make it into tamim, but aver is not enough to reap. Oh, no, he wants to say faker. In the case of shofar, we can make it into tamim if we use what? Let's say we use shivrei shofars. And therefore, so I would have said that in the case of krushim, I would need shivrei krushim. No, he's saying no. Shivrei krushim won't help me here. I can put in aver. And if it's aver, I can shuv chazal tamuso v'koshel mishkan. What does he say in the footnote here? Samach Beis. Oh, look at that. That's fascinating. He has a separate Gzeres HaKosuv to tell you that Aver could be Machshir and make it into Tomim. Why? Because it says in the Pasuk in Shmos, V'yosisa Sakroshim L'mishkan Atze Shite Mikol Makom. Not sure which word is superfluous here, but there's some superfluous word that teaches me Kol Makom. And what does Mikol Makom teach me? That even if it's Me'urav Bo Min Acher. Oh, so this is the exception to the rule. So Min Acher would normally be a psul, and it's not called Tamim. And that's why in Shofar, for example, you had Min Acher would not be kosher. But here there's a special halacha that you can make it kosher by adding Mum Acher, and that's derived from a pasuk. Right. So if this be the case, Rabosai, maybe, I'm just thinking out loud, we're going back to Meleches Bona, and we're trying to see if in Mishkan they did this kind of Binyan Koldu. And Binyan Koldu, we said in the framework of Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, means that it's not a structural change, it's the same Keresh, you know, 99% of the Keresh is there, but I have a hole and I want to fill in that hole. That's also called Meleches Binyan. Perhaps Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is adding another element here to the equation, and that is that since the Krushim have a din of Hegdesh, then after Nafla Badarna, there's a separate Chiyuv to make it Tamim. In other words, I had a Keresh which was Tamim, so I was Makayim the Mitzvah of Tamim. Again, what's the Pasuk? Let's read it one more time. What does it say about Sisa? Just 1 second. I'm sorry. It says here on the wrong page here. It says here the Yachtov Yu Tamim. So there's a Yu Tamim here. Yu Tamim. You know, it's a separate kium of Yu Tamim. That when you build the Mishkan, it's got to be from Krushim to Mimim. And the key, and the kiyum, the key, right? So you're asking, what was your objection to Abaye about these, you know, these small pute kira? You said, well, ein anias b'makom ashirus. Here it has nothing to do with ein anias b'makom ashirus. On the contrary, in the Mishkan they were obligated, says Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, to do this. Why? Because tamim yu, and they had to make sure that the krushim would be tamim.
And the
No, you'll ask me, maybe replace it with a different keresh. Apparently there's halacha of hebesh, that once you were miyachidit to hebesh, what is a chisarn tamim, but the Torah went out of its way to tell you that mikol makom, that even if you add leather, which is eino pino, you can still replace and resurrect the din of tamim. So that you have to do so, and therefore for sure they did it in the Mishkan. But again, the radical chiddush of Rav Acha bar Yaakov is that even if I didn't make a significant structural change, I just fixed up a binyan, that itself would be meleches bone. So I'm wondering out loud, Rav Osa, again, I haven't learned the sugyas yet of bone, but what would be if I have a peg in the wall, and I hang a painting on that peg, and the peg falls, and now I again take a hammer and knock that peg in, would that be Melech's binyan? I haven't made a structural change. It's not like building a window, you know, breaking a window, but on the other hand, I've improved the binyan to the extent in which now I can hang up a painting. You know, I bought a Rembrandt in auction. You know, I got it cheap for $55 million, right? So I want to put the Rembrandt up on the thing. So what do? I need a peg to hold the Rembrandt. You know, so now I knock in a peg in the wall. Maybe that would be, according to Rav Acha bar Yaakov, enough of an improvement in the house that even though it's not structural, it's home improvement. So we have home structuring or restructuring. And now we have home improvement.
That's a famous Rambam. Atokeya eitz be'eitz, achin esachel harezer told this morning.
Oh, okay, good. So again, I apologize. I didn't see the Rambam.
But he didn't say, I don't know whether that Rambam is different. Rambam's one, maybe you don't have to have it structurally better for hanging a picture. It just has to be that you've taken two things and put them together.
Eitz be'eitz.
Without any tachas at all.
I wonder what he means by a space. Is he talking about a kli? Because the Gemara is going to have this sugya that I'm trying to push off for a little time. Of Binyan Mikalim is going to talk about a case where he puts two Eitzim together to make a Kli. The Rambam doesn't say that it's for a Kli. He's talking about a building, a structure. That would be interesting if the Rambam is talking about Kalim. That would send us in a different light. Now, Rabosa, what I'd like to do with you is talk to you a little bit about the following. We have here a sefer which is brand new for me. It's actually about what do we say, 5 centuries old, and it's called Rabbeinu Moshe Kaziz, and he was apparently a Talmud back in the day of the Ramah Mipanua, and very recently they discovered in Hungary the manuscript that was centuries lost, and they published it in Moria Publishing Company, Machon Yerushalayim. And do we have a photocopy of that? I think we gave out a photocopy, did we not? Or this we didn't copy?
Yes.
Yeah, we did? Oh, great. So it should be on page Ches, I think, right? You have that? It should say Otzer Yunim on top? Maybe I didn't photocopy that for you. I don't know if I did or I didn't. If I didn't, then we'll try to photocopy it. The copy that I have here is a little bit light, but Yechiel gave me a darker copy. Let's see if I can pull this out. We'll very quickly make a photocopy of this. Just one second.
And you only really need that first page?
Let's see where it is. Give me a second. Perikop Bona, let's just see. I just want to make sure that that's what we're looking for. Yeah, I guess that's the paragraph, but it's not exactly the way he quoted it. So you know what? Let's do this. Let me just read to you what he says here. It's on page Tess in the Otzer HaYunim. Let me just find it. Yeah. Okay. Just one second. So look, I'll tell you what, Yechiel, you do me a favor if you don't mind. You have this, right? You follow this text, and I'm gonna follow this text, and we'll compare notes if you follow me. Right? So you have this one? Okay. So it's the second paragraph. Okay. He says like this. Kasa b'chidushei Rabbeinu Moshe Kazis. Lo rak al asiyas guma o bnia cheres shenish lemes bikol shehu chayov ela af habone bayis gadol im bona kol shehu mimena b'shabes chayov. He says the following. Lest one entertain the following thought, that binyan koldu means when you did the entire binyan koldu. You follow what I mean? You have flat ground and you dug a hole in the ground. You have a kira without pitputim on it and you added pitpute kira. So let's take both Rav Yirmiya and Abaye at this point. But what happens if you were to add something to a binyan gadol that already exists? That's not bone. You didn't build the structure. And it's not a binyan katan because the structure was already there. He says, no. Lo rak asiyas guma o bnia cheres shenishlema b'chol shehu. Right, I didn't have pitpute kira, so I had to complete this kira by adding pitputim. Ela af habone bayis gadol. Again, he has already a big structure. V'bona kol shu mimenu b'shabes chayav. That also is chayav. Me'achar sha'osa melacha b'shir she'derech b'nei adam laso sosa melacha b'lila hosif aleha. And the chiddush here, I think, and I wonder if we have to accept this chiddush, is that Abaye, Rabbi Yirmiya and Abaye would accept this, and they would extend what they said to the case of Abaye's gadol. I don't know that that's so. I thought that they both were focused on creating something new, and I thought it was only Rav Acha bar Yaakov who made the radical chiddush that if you add and enhance a pre-existing binyan, you're chayif for meleches bona. It seems that, if I understand correctly, Rav Moshe Kaziz understands that all three shitas in the Gemara would embrace this principle. But again, he adds one important caveat, one condition. He says only if this tosefes that you add to enhance the binyan is a miskayim. What does he mean it's miskayim? The first condition is that he completes that part that he adds. In other words, he adds something, but he doesn't just begin that process of adding, but he adds something that is a total entity on itself. That's called meleches bona. That's condition number one. Right? But he says, if he adds something that's eno miskayim kmo shehu, you know, he's only got stage number one, but he hasn't completed that addition. So let's say, for example, the Rembrandt painting will not be held up by one peg. You need two pegs, and he only added one peg. Even though he's halfway there, that's not enough to be considered a meleches bona. But by the way, if he's building a full new structure, as soon as he puts down one stone, that's enough for him to be chayav mishum bona. But not only that, he wants to say that such a chiyuv of bnias kol shehu, when he adds something to a pre-existing building, is dafka be'ofet shabinyan sha'asa nikar la'enayim. That I think you'll see here in our printout, right? Nikar le'einayim. Right? Kigon kodeach chur kolshu bakosel. So he adds a hole, he drills a hole, a small hole in a wall, and I guess he needs that hole. Hoel v'nikeres pulosoliet la'ayim chayv. So he adds a whole new t'nai here, Melechus Bonin. The binyan has to be nikar la'ayim. Again, we're not talking about mostly about the whole issue about microscopic germs, you know, whether they amoebas in water, you know, whether there's an isotolohim. He's talking about a malacha, that a malacha, even though it's substantial, it has to be something that is readily perceptible. Avol mishi yesh lo guma b'sof beso v'rochtza l'sosmo v'hishlich l'tocha afar kol shehu. In other words, this shinui is not nikar la'ayim. You know, if you add that to what we saw in the McDonald's, whatever his name was there, that it would not possibly a keresh, because it's not a shinui that's nikar la'ayim. So what did he do? He added a little bit of aver into this hole in the wall, or in the roof, or wherever it was. In such a case, then that stima would not generate a chiyuv meleches bona. It's all or nothing. Lo mistabish a chayv al kaf. Ein ze bechlal isur bona. Kevin shel hol maisa ze klal. So again, if you're building part of a structure, even though you have a long way to go, a long, long way to go, then you chayv for meleches bona. But if you're only adding something to a structure, then that which you add has to be complete in and of itself. And it's got, in this case, you have to remove the guma completely. Then you could say he did something significant. There's no longer a guma. But even though he filled in part of a guma, that's not good enough. You know, either she's pregnant or she's not pregnant. It's an all or nothing proposition. He removed the guma and it's no longer nira le'inayim, or he didn't remove the guma. But if hishlich li ofar, betocha ofar, be ofet shadayin nikar la'ayin, Shehu Guma is then he would not be chayef. Now he adds something else. Again, Achim Hishlich. So how much of this is in this very short paragraph?
Not that much.
No, he's adding a lot here. I don't know if he had a different text.
There's no reference to Miskayim in this paragraph. It sounds like,
and that's the only source he quotes here.
It sounds to me like this paragraph is only talking about relativity. If what I'm doing relative to the size of the structure I'm doing it to is too small, then it's not nikkur, then it's not chashivas. But if
so that idea we do have, so that itself is very important. You know, you're adding something and it's not nikkur le'inayim, that's not bone. But then he goes on and he says something else, that if you add something and you don't complete in such a way that it's miskayim.
Unless that's the next paragraph, so it doesn't look miskayim.
Could be. But here I don't think he means that. He's not referring to miskayim in the sense that it falls apart. He's just saying that he hasn't achieved his goal. That's what he means. Because utzarach od lahosif olav. That's what he means by ain't a miskayim. He would never leave it in this state. He says, "Mishi yesh lo guma v'toch beiso v'rotzel esos ma v'yesh lo toch offer kol shehu lo mistabrish echayim al kach kevin shel ahoil b'maisa ze klal shari aguma dayin nireis."
It's like a kavol.
He backtracks a little bit here at the end, and he says that he doesn't have to be so same completely, totally. But he has to be so same in a way that part of the whole is covered. I guess he means there's a significant change over here. So it's nikar la'ayin that the stima has already accomplished a goal. He hasn't yet been so same everything, but part of the guma has been closed. So the guma itself is a is a what do we call it? Harkava. What was it called? No, the other one. Tarfich Hazara here in the Rugged Show. Harkava Mishnit, was that what he called it? No. Okay. So, in other words, the different parts. He's saying that you can take the Guma and break it down to its different parts, and if one part of the Guma he has successfully been so same, and that's Nikar La'ayin, then he's chayev for that, even though there's still. No, there's still water dripping in, and he has to be sosa in the other part of the guma.
Even though it didn't cover, it served as toelis.
Right, he hasn't achieved his ultimate goal yet, but at least it's nikar la'ayin that he's on his way. So that sort of backtracks a little bit in terms of the chiddush. Okay, what is meleches boneh? So let's just try to get a picture here of Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer. And then Bli Neder will add, you know, next week we'll try to embellish it a little bit more. So, do you have a page that says Tess on it? Just 1 second. Zeb, I'll be with you just a second to make sure I have the right page over here. No, it's not on page Tess.
Tess from what is he saying?
That's what I don't remember. I'm looking around here. We had something here from Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer, and now I'm not finding it. Just 1 second. I just wanted to give you just like an overview of what he said. Oh, here it is. Page Ayin Hey. You have that? Ayin Hey. It should say on top, Yalkut Bi'urim. Do you have such a page, Ayin Hey? So he gives you an overview of Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer. And he says the following. The Rambam tells us, you see, it says Geder Meleches Bono on Ayin Hey left column, that Ose Ohel Kavua Chayav Mishum Toledes Bono. Okay, don't be confused here by the word Kavua, because he needs a Melacha Miskayim. So he puts up a permanent tent. Again, you have to know what makes it permanent, whether it's a day, a month, a year, and he's Chayav. But the Rambam says that he's chayev as a tolda of boneh. Now, offhand, this structure is not different than any other structure. You could have said that maybe an oil is made of ar, it's made of leather, and therefore it's not permanent, it's flimsy, you know, it can be blown away by the wind, but the Rambam is not saying that. The Rambam says it's an oil kavua. I know a shul in Englewood that they davened in an OL. It's one of the largest shuls in the United States, and probably the most prestigious shul in the United States. The rabbi just made aliyah. He settled here. And in that shul, I think they davened in the OL for about a decade. I mean, the OL itself cost $2 million, I think. I don't know what they did with it when they finished the structure. It was 5 years, okay. I know I came from many different years, and it was always in the OL.
There was a bubble.
There was a bubble, yeah.
Maybe there's no Tosefet. That's what he's talking about. There's nothing Chadash. He's just assembling it.
Well, no. He's saying it's Ose Ohel Kavu. He's not talking... The Ram later on talks about Mosif Ala Ohel. That's a separate category.
Maybe he's got the Ohel and he's just setting it up.
Yeah, but setting it up should be Meleches Boneh. If you have all the stones and you put them together, then you chay for Boneh. So why is that called the Tolv? So the Rosh Hashiva wants to suggest the following. That the Rambam has in Perek Zayin Alocha Vav a tolda called Megabe, which is cheese making. And in the process of cheese making, what you do is you have different pieces of cheese that float on top of the water, and then he's makabates, he gathers them together, ashenasu guf echad, until it becomes one entity.
Brick of cheese.
One brick of cheese. Now, at this point, there's a whole new definition of Meleches Boneh. He's not creating a structure at all. He says, Muchach, he wants to prove, Chazinon de Dasa Rambam, Geder Meleches Boneh, Hu Kibutz Chalokim V'dibukom Zeh L'Zeh. Hachinasi Guf Echad. The Rambam gives us a clear-cut definition of Meleches Boneh. But that doesn't make any sense. Meleches Boneh requires a binyan. And therefore, how could the Rambam say that Megabin is Chayiv? And not only that, the Rambam only calls it a Tolda. if we're saying that the basic definition of Meleches Binyan is kibbutz halakim, you know, when you structure something by taking together different parts, then a gabin should be an avmo. Excuse me. Should be an avmo, correct?
Yep.
Well, so again, we have a problem here. Because when he created a structure called an ol kavua, the Rambam calls it a tolda. So obviously, creating a structure is not an av. And on the other hand, when the Rambam gives us another definition of bona, which is kibbutz halakim zelos achenasu gifata, there also the Rambam calls it a tolda. And we don't understand how to put this all together. Says Rav Issa Zalman that enochinami to create meleches bona, and again, you really have to understand how Ovis and Toldus work here. This really belongs to Periklal Gadol. This is from Rav Issa Zalman. He says the following, that you need two conditions to be fulfilled in order to create the av. But one, either of those two conditions are enough to create the tolda. Now keep in mind, Rav Osai, that the tolda looks totally different than the av, so that you can't tell me that the tolda here is dome bitzuraso, and the tzuras ha-maisa, megamin, with all due respect, is not similar to creating a binyan. Elo what? It's a tolda because it has this element of makabeitz chelik al chelik. Ohel, on the other hand, is also only a tolda because although it is creating a structure, but it's lacking the makabeitz chalok in the front. Maybe Zev, that's what you meant before. In other words, he's got the whole thing assembled, if you will, and all he has to do is put it up. And that's not kibbutz chalokim al chalokim. And therefore, in the case of Ohel, there's only prisas hasadin.
It's like an umbrella.
Like an umbrella. And therefore, since it only has one of the two elements, it doesn't have the element of mekabetz chelik al chelik. Therefore, it's only a tolda. So, therefore, he concludes that asiyas Ohel is a tolda. Why? Because lo kibbutz v'dibek chalokim. Now, the flip side is true in the case of a gabin. That's also only a tolda because afal pisha kibbutz v'dibek chalokim is lo nasa kan oel. There's no new structure that was formed over here. And therefore, says Rav Issa Zalman, in order to create an av of meleches bona, you need A plus B. You've got to create a structure of binyan. And from that perspective, an oel would also be a binyan and would qualify as the av melech. But there's another condition, and you have to also have this feature, this dimension of mekabeitz chelek al chelek that's absent in the case of oel kavua. Flip it around. What if you have mekabeitz chelek al chelek without creating a structure? That there also becomes only a tolda. So either one of these two elements can get you a tolda. I'll tell you the truth, Rabbi, like, this is so contrary to everything that I ever understood about Ovis and Toldus. I always thought that the difference between a tolda and an av is either in the shini b'tsuras ha-malacha or the goal of the malacha. Here he's saying that there are two elements that both have to coincide or overlap in order to generate the malacha, but yet either one of those two elements is enough, even though these two elements are two radically different definitions of the malacha, one or the other is enough to create a tolda. And if you're saying you need these two elements, then in the absence of these two elements, it shouldn't be chayiv at all.
Maybe I read the Rambam reading wrong, but it says, Osa Ula Kavuma. It sounds to me like you're saying that that's what he did. He built an ol kavuva,
piece by piece.
Is
that what you mean? Piece by piece.
No, I thought that what Rambam was saying is there was an ol, but he made it kavuva. It was that.
That's mincha.
Yeah.
Ooh, I didn't even realize what time it is.
Yeah, so it was aroi before, and he did. He made it kavua, but not by adding any parts.
Right. No, you have to go back to the Rambam. But he just for our purposes, the way he's reading the Rambam is ha-ose ohel,
yeah,
kava. But you have to know, and you have to add that description, that adjective, that this was not an ohel arai, which the Rambam is going to pick up later on. which is only an Issa Drabbanan, but rather it's an Ohel Kavua. But he made the Ohel. But the Rambam,
he made the Ohel.
But what does it mean he made the Ohel? He says it's just the Prisas Hasad. He wasn't putting together the Ohel from scratch, you know, little segments you're adding together. But I'm just saying, in Ovison told us this is a pretty radical approach to Ovison told us that the Malach itself needs two definitions, two elements, and either one of them is enough to create the Talmud. That to me is pretty way out.